Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For a radio audience tuning in at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com, we're glad that you all can be with us. Also, tuning in through our online affiliates around the world, thanks to our podcast. We're glad you all could be with us as well. Well, you know, I know these days, as we hear so much about the advancements in technology and how AI is becoming so much a big part of our lives, some people are looking at the positives of that. Others, though, fear what could happen. Our next guest has written a book that really shows us how we can be able to immerse ourselves, I think, in a world that does kind of bring to life those fears. We're excited to welcome to our broadcast today author Thomas R. Weaver. His novel is called Artificial Wisdom. We're going to talk to not only about the writing of the book, what it was like for him to be able to show how real-life situations and as well, of course, the future could be at stake when it comes to things being in the wrong hands, but also what it's been like for me to hear from readers about what they think about the book as well. If you guys are just now hearing about Artificial Wisdom, we'll let you know how to get your own copy of it. Thomas, thank you again for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Thomas, this book, I think when I first dove into it, I thought, you know, this book is going to be, it was entertaining, it was engaging, but it definitely, as I mentioned, for people who are already wondering about, you know, the dangers of, you know, of some of what we see in the world when it comes to advances in technologies, I think a book like this will kind of reinforce some of those fears for them. But as the author, as the creator, what has it been like for you, Tom, to see the way that people are responding to the book?
It's fascinating, and I think I've seen the full spectrum of responses. I mean, all of it positive, but I very deliberately wanted to create a story that had one in it, but didn't take the, I think, overtrodden path now that movies like Terminator and Matrix and, you know, 2001 and every other movie that involves AI has taken, which is working on the assumption that AI is automatically going to be bad and destroy humanity. You know, I wanted to be able to show something that had the opportunity of looking at some of the positives of how it could actually do things for us that we can't do ourselves. But you have to also be able to talk about the price. And, you know, it's been great seeing readers' reaction to that. I saw one today that said, I'd been told this book was too close for comfort, and it absolutely was. It had me kind of reading it under the sheets. You know, it's not a horror novel. It's not really a dystopia, but I think some of the things that I talk about hit very close to home to people.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of different things in the book that will make people, as they're reading it and kind of taking it in, Thomas, well, I can speak for myself as a reader, that it makes you kind of think about, you know, the times that we live in, but also, of course, the possibilities. What I will say in this book that really was striking for me is that even for those who may be looked at as on the good side or the good guys, you didn't mind putting them in some pretty tough situations. So I guess I should let our audience know, I mean, technology is not new to you. Inventing, creating is not new to you. But what was the idea that kind of sparked Artificial Wisdom?
Well, I have to say it was probably political. I mean, back when I started to write this in 2019, the world had gone through quite a few years of political change, both through Brexit here in the UK, you know, and the increasing polarization, I think, that we can see in the US and in other countries around the world. And I was very much struck by this idea of how easy it is for foreign nations now to influence us, to influence our populations in very unsophisticated ways on social media. You know, all you need is to spin up, you know, 10,000 accounts saying the same thing, and if people hear it over and over again, it can change how they vote. And that was quite scary for me to kind of observe from a fairly centrist position that I'm in. And the big thing that was going through my head is, when technology gets better, what is that going to be like? What happens when we can't distinguish between real people and technology anymore? What kind of world are we going to live in? And in a way, that was the opportunity of putting kind of all my fears around the future of technology and trust and everything else into an actual book that I wanted to read.
Talk to us about Tully. How did Tully come to you?
Tully is the protagonist of the story, but in a way was the most complicated character for me to write. He took ages to come off the page and to come alive. Some of the other characters knew who they were instantly, and they just seemed to flow. But Tully was difficult, and I think it was because I didn't want to create, you know, a very black and white kind of hero. I wanted someone who was on a journey and didn't always do things for the right reasons, you know, was complicated. And so Tully is an investigative journalist in this book. He lost his wife in a prior climate disaster and has never really got over it. He grieves for her. It's been 10 years, but he's still grieving. He doesn't want to let her go, even though everybody tells him that he should move on with his life. And so very much he is a workaholic. He's at the top of his game as an investigative journalist in a world where the big media networks no longer exist and everybody writes on Substack-style websites or independent kind of journalists now, but with their own teams. So he's very, very good at what he does. He is a workaholic that lives essentially in his office, and he is presented one day with a tip for a story like no other, that essentially the climate disaster that killed his wife, a very humid heat wave that hit the Middle East, was an actual geoengineering disaster, that actually the disaster was meant to hit the U.S. and the U.S. was able to divert it, but unfortunately it hit the Middle East instead. So that's the tip he gets, and obviously that is a huge conflict of interest of a story to begin investigating, but it is nevertheless the story that he goes after.
Right. And I think, too, it is a story that brings itself its own risk, not only for him, but also others. And I won't dive too much into that on Thomas because I don't want to give anything away. But what I will see is that what he's able to see, that as he's digging for answers, of course, that there are real consequences. As even your subtitle of the book, Salvation Has a Price, shows itself. But there are a lot of moments in the book, I have to say, as I was reading it, that were kind of cool in that they made you kind of, you can almost picture some of the action, you know, almost like, you know, you have these people doing things and you think, wow, I can see that coming to life, you know, in a television show or a movie. When you were writing it, did it feel like that? Did it feel like you were witnessing this as it was unfolding on the page?
I've heard it said a lot that actually if people do see this, can visualize it very well. And certainly that was an intention. It was the way I planned to write it. I wanted it to be very visual, wanted it to be very cinematographic, you know. And it's hard when you're writing it because it doesn't really come out like that. It's, you know, it's coming out a word here, a sentence there, and everything else. One thing I will say is that this is my first book, you know, and obviously you learn a lot when you're writing a book. One of the things I didn't expect was how much better I got at actually visualizing a scene in my head by the end of writing it versus where I was at the start. It's almost like your brain had learned a little bit to be able to picture these things. And I found that the better I pictured a scene visually before writing it, the better the scene came out. You know, going for a walk or a run and almost just seeing it allowed me to get that scene down in a much better way.
Love that. And I think that is one of the things that people will really get, is that the story really does flow well, Thomas. So for yourself, when you were finished writing the book, what was that like for you to see how it all unfolded? Because I'm curious, did you have the ending in mind? Did you know how you wanted the story to end? Or was it something that kind of evolved as the story unfolded?
Oh, it was very much one where I knew the ending almost before I knew anything else.
Okay.
And this was kind of one of those things where literally in the first words that I wrote is you mentioned earlier like a what if, and this is it was writing a big what if statement, and you know, knowing where I wanted to take things, and that allowed me to guide the story towards that ending. And of course there are so many twists and turns in it. It's very deliberately, I love books with twists and turns, and I wanted to create something that people would think that they could see where it was going and then still get it wrong, In the tradition of Agatha Christie. I think I had just read, before I started writing it, I had just read Agatha Christie's Murder of Roger Ackroyd, and I sat there with pen and paper, determined that I was going to get who was the murderer, and I didn't. I completely failed, and I loved that. And so that was a huge influence for me going in. I was like, I want to be able to create something where you kind of feel as a reader that you've slotted everything together and you're pretty sure you have it figured out. And it's still wrong, but in a satisfying way. You want to still get, you don't want to feel let down. You want to feel like, that's better than what I would have come up with. So that was the North Star I was aiming at, and then everything else was working its way back from there.
Love it, love it. And I think that is one of the cool things I have to say for myself reading it, that, I mean, I think there's enough things that kind of divert us from, you know, the true bad guy, and I use that kind of fluidly here, in the book. And I think it just shows how easily we can be misled, but also how easy it is for us to judge. So I want to ask you about that part. I think that's the safest to get into without diving into any spoilers here, Tom. Was that part of the thing that kind of came through for you, that there's always more than what we see, and that we have to be very careful not to judge the world just by our perspective of it?
Yeah, and I think it's incredibly important. This whole theme about judging and trust was very central to the book, and also what are my fears right now. I think that we are so easily misled, and technology is making it easier. And I'm looking at things right now, like voice cloning, and it's incredible technology. And of course, I've played with it. The potential fraud and for horrendous acts to be committed using this incredible technology, which is game-changing, are scary. And, you know, even more so when you think actually we're a society now which can, can look at a tweet or an Instagram reel or something else and consume it millions and millions and millions of times without knowing whether that is true or not, and are very unlikely to do the work to dig beneath that. So we often do take stuff and judge it based on what we see, but what we see nowadays may not be authentic at all, and we're going to reach very, very quickly this part of society where huge, impactful events may happen based on false information. And, I don't know how we deal with that apart from just to be aware of it and to be very careful about it, but it's definitely one of the biggest things that we're going to be facing in the 5 years ahead of now.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point, Thomas, and that is, as Tully realizes, it's not like saying that there's not good that can't be done by these things. It's just about the what the motive and intention is behind it. And I think that's kind of what plays itself out in artificial wisdom, is all about motive and intent, right? I mean, the same thing that can do a lot of good has that opportunity there to be able to do bad if that is the goal. And I think that is the part we don't always think about. We automatically think, okay, these things just happen. But this book definitely shows that, no, there's intent that goes into this. And what is the motive behind it? So I have to ask you, this may be an unfair question, but I'm sure you've gotten this question already. As a first-time author, you probably have experienced one of two things, or both already, Thomas. One, people telling you how much they enjoy the book, but also secondly, asking when the next one's coming. So since I know the first part, because you've shared that, are you feeling any pressure for a follow-up?
Absolutely, and most of all from my family and friends, who are obviously the ones who can call me up directly and say, hey, you know, when's the next one coming out? Before this book was even published, I started to write a second book, and on the advice of my editor and my coach, I deliberately didn't write a sequel to Artificial Wisdom next, because we weren't sure really whether the themes and the ideas in this are too big, whether people would really want to read about things that are so close to our reality today. You know, I always think sci-fi has this wonderful opportunity of tackling the biggest issues of your time, but through a lens of the future. And that was exactly what I did with Artificial Wisdom. But, you know, we weren't sure how it would be received. So I wrote a second book, which was a lot of fun, and I'm still working on that, although it's, you know, it's one of those stages where you're not quite happy with the draft and you want it to improve more. And I definitely think one or two more drafts and that one will be done. But I am also working on the sequel to Artificial Wisdom, and there will be only one more. I don't see this as a long series, but it's such a huge, vast story to tell. And in order to create the biggest twist at the end, it inevitably opened up another question, which was impossible to answer within that book. And so the next book has to answer that question. And obviously, the trick now is almost to reverse everything and to think, okay, people are coming into this second book with very different ideas and knowledge about what could be happening. How do you now create that same kind of roadmap of twists and turns without people inevitably thinking that they know exactly what's going on? It's in progress. I'm working on it, I couldn't tell you the day when it will be done, unfortunately, but a lot of people want it, and my grandmother just celebrated her 100th birthday, and for her birthday present, I actually gave her, and only her, a copy of my first five chapters of it, and the dedication, which will be to her, because she's one of my biggest fans, and she's read my first book, you know, more times than any others, and she can quote bits of it, and she knows the difference between all of the drafts, and, you know, so I don't know whether I can, how quickly I can get it completed for her, but the next book will be dedicated to her.
Well, what a beautiful tribute, and what a great conversation with you, Thomas. Congratulations on the book, and definitely enjoyed speaking with you about it. Again, everyone, Thomas R. Weaver has been our guest. The book is Artificial Wisdom. You don't have to wait for it. It is out now. You can get it through our friends at Amazon.com. Definitely make sure you guys tell a friend about it as well. You definitely will enjoy the story. And Thomas, what about for yourself? How can our audience stay connected with you?
Sure. Well, I'm on various different social media platforms, Instagram and Threads and X are probably the easiest way to get hold of me, at Tom_Weaver, or go to my website, thomasrweaver.com.
All right. Well, Thomas, congratulations to you again. Enjoy this moment. Sink it in. And we look forward to our next conversation together.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Hey, glad to have you, and we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let's go make today amazing. Take care.